I think we got, was it a 2.5-inch lift on that Willie's bill that we put in there? I think we got like almost 5 inches or something out of the back. I mean, oh my God. Crazy.
Like Inspector Gadget or something with the spring.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And so it kind of throws up everything else because you're not expecting it to get that much lift out of the spring. So now your control arms and just how everything else is, it really makes it, can make it tough. So it's good, but there is a downfall at that kind of level.
Hi, I'm Tony, and tonight, on tonight's roundtable, we'll be asking the following questions. Have you ever had your Jeep vandalized? Was the vandal found and held accountable? What is your favorite suspension? What are the pros and cons? Do you keep a maintenance log for your Jeep? For your wheeling style, which do you prefer, high horsepower and wheel speed or super low gearing and crawling? All that and possibly more on this episode of the Roundtable.
Are you ready?
It's the Jeep Talk Show with Wendy.
There will be body damage.
Chuck. I like making people laugh. It's good for my soul.
Josh.
Yeah, I don't think so.
And
I think that's a huge deal.
So sit back, strap in, and brace yourself.
Hey, if you're new to the Roundtable, every Wednesday we publish the Roundtable episode recorded the day before. Tuesday is, that's also what it's known as. We have 4 episodes a week. The Roundtable is just one of those episodes. Tuesday and Thursday are our flagship episodes, and Friday is our interview episode. So 4 episodes a week from the Jeep Talk Show. We've been doing this since 2010. That's like 3 years or so. No, I guess that'd be more like 13 years. Anyway, if you'd like to, sign up for our newsletter for weekly reminders on when and how to join the Roundtable. So we now join the Roundtable. Let's get up on the screen for our YouTube live viewers. Good evening, Zoom people, Knights of the Zoom Roundtable. Don't forget, on your first time speaking, please say your name and about where you're located. Good evening, hello. Everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. What?
So just go down the list really quick. We got Bill, ATX, Steve O, Chris, Jimmy, Mixon, Tony. I think that's the last name. Sorry about that, Tony. Roger, Larry from Jeeping Mo, Mudman 084, we have Andrew P. We got Bob, two cheap Jeep guys. Bob's only one of the two cheap Jeep guys. John L, Kyle F, Matt from Indiana, and Rich L. Thank you guys for being here. I think I got everybody, at least everybody that's on now. We always have some people come in a little late, but certainly appreciate you joining us. And are you guys ready to go?
Yeah, yes,
sir.
Ready as lover be.
All right, so I kind of self-serving again, but that's the nice thing about having a show. Have you ever had your Jeep vandalized, and was the vandal found and held accountable?
How much time do you got? This is Roger from Wisconsin.
Give me the Reader's Digest version, Roger.
Well, I had a 92 or 93 YJ. Was stolen from my parents' house when I was living there. They used it to trash a campground, a park, drove through about 17 oak poles, a fence, ripped the top off. It left it hanging out in the woods. They found it the next day after it rained. The Jeep got confiscated into the police impound. The person who stole it never sat a day in jail and only paid $300 in restitution. And they say crime doesn't pay.
So did this get a young lady pregnant, and are you still paying child support?
No, I actually had a bunch of stereo equipment that was in the vehicle. This is back when I was in high school, and I cared about all that stereo equipment stuff. And I think they stole it for all that, and they ripped all that stuff off. Never saw any of it.
So how did they get away with it? Why wouldn't they have been had some sort of legal proceedings against them, even if it was civil?
I think it was all because several of them were under the age of 18. So, but I don't know. To be honest with you, $300 the restitution is all I saw.
What did you wind up losing? Company. Thousands?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and then obviously the Jeep was down for well over a month. And I mean, I think if my insurance company covered fixing the Jeep, so I mean, yeah, it's pretty bad.
So you weren't treated very well by the legal system at all then?
Oh, no. Matter of fact, I shouldn't say that I didn't get anything back. I had some Blaupunkt crossovers for the tweeters in the stereo system, and I was in the detective's office one day talking to him about it, and I looked over and saw him sitting on the table, and I says, "Hey, those are mine." And he says, "Oh, I was wondering where those came from."
Oh, great. Just a yeah, play, not a detective then.
My confidence went right through the roof, let me tell you.
Anybody else had a problem? Maybe not a Jeep theft, but something vandalized? I mean, certainly Roger had his Jeep vandalized as well, but any vandalism? It seems to me that the police aren't very concerned about vehicles being vandalized.
Yeah, this is Tony. Sorry if my audio is not that great. I have actually had a couple of my Jeeps vandalized. First off was my Black Cherokee. I came outside one day at my old apartment, and I found someone decided to throw eggs all over it. And second was the Red Cherokee. Someone stole the catalytic converter right out from under it. Oh, and I guess on top of that, there was a handful of times people decided to draw on the paint in the mud. That always sucked.
So, how did you find out about the catalytic converter being stolen? Was it the first startup?
Yep, I woke all my neighbors up. Normally, this particular Jeep's quite quiet, very stock, clean exhaust system, and the other Jeep, it's the kind of the raggedy one, and I almost thought I got in the wrong Jeep that morning, but nope, someone decided to just steal my exhaust, steal the cat.
So no security footage, nothing indicating who it was that did any of these things, and I would guess there was not even anything that the police had to go on.
No, it was actually a week after they had stolen the four-wheeler out of the bed of my truck. So it was... little to say, I don't live in that area anymore.
I was just going to ask you, what part of the country is this, and do you still live there? So we know you just still don't you don't live there anymore, but what area of the country was this?
Outside Flint, Michigan.
Do you think it was the lead in the water that was causing them to act this way?
If they could sell it, maybe.
All right, anybody else got a vandal story? I'd like to hear a vandalization story where somebody was caught, or maybe you caught them and beat the shit out of them.
Well, mine was caught. It's just they didn't get anything for it. And
yeah,
I personally know the kid. I know who the kid's name that did it.
And for legal reasons, we can't find out if you beat the shit out of them or not.
Oh, I'd love to tell you that one.
Was it a drug-related thing?
For me?
Yeah, was the kid that
did all that stuff drug-related? No, there was nothing. No, it was nothing drug-related. I think it was just young kids doing stupid things, you know? Hold my beer, watch this. Let's go do this. We're bored.
You remember when people used to toilet paper people's houses before it became so horribly expensive? And egging. Somebody said something about being egged. Tony said something about being egged. Can you imagine? That'd be worse than buying 50 caliber rounds these days.
I never egged anybody, but we toilet papered enough houses during homecoming when I was in high school.
It was always
hey,
fun
Roger,
to see.
You said, hold my beer and watch this. I didn't know that was your Jeep, man.
Oh. Well, at least you could do it next time is at least buy me a beer.
Only let me ask you this. Now, with Bob talking, it makes me think of this question. No offense, Bob. Have you vandalized a Jeep and would like to tell us about it, or maybe tell us about your friend vandalizing a Jeep?
I vandalize my Black XJ every single time I take it off-road.
You can't get in trouble for abusing yourself.
So growing up, we did stuff to each other's rigs all the time. If you were dumb enough to leave your key in it or something, or let somebody find out where the keys were, or sometimes we just hotwire it if we knew how. But we did stuff to each other's things all the time. Mine less than some other people's because I had a bit of a temper when I was younger, but we still screwed around a lot. We do little stuff. No damage. Like, we never damaged anything, but we would screw around and mess with each other doing stuff.
Doesn't have to be a Jeep.
On the drive shaft is still one of the
best. I was just gonna say, I never did try that one. I didn't know about it until Facebook and stuff. I think that would be wonderful.
Does it have to be a Jeep, Tony?
Preferably.
Oh, well, okay. Do you want to know? Now you're curious, right?
No, I'm fine. Thank you. but thanks for asking. All right. Let's move on to a question that Larry provided for us. What is your favorite suspension, and what are the pros and cons? And this would also be for a Jeep, Roger.
This is Chris from Detroit, and I have to say American Expedition vehicles for most Jeeps. I know some would have opinions otherwise, running bigger tires, but I just think overall they have the best suspension system, be it a 2-inch lift or 3-inch lift or 4-inch lift.
And is it because of ride, articulation, yes? What?
Yeah, yes. Yes, I mean, it's ride, engineering. The only negative I'd have to say is the way on the JK, at least, and I assume it's on the JL and the JT, where they have lower front and lower control arm drop brackets, which hangs down a little more than what you would want, but still you retain the factory control arms on the bottom.
Yeah.
But the overall articulation, ride, and you see a lot on Facebook about, I put this lift in, or I put these shocks in, I put this spring in, and it rides funny, with the dual rate springs. I mean, it actually rides better than stock.
So you're talking about for a JK, correct?
JK and JL.
What is your experience with a JL? I know you have a JK.
I've ridden in my friend's JL, his two-door JL, and it rides extremely well. It actually rides better than my JK, and my JK is a four-door.
Interesting.
So this is John, Central Texas. I would say there's a lot of answers. I don't think very few or very many of us have had a multitude or a sample size big enough to say this is the best one of personal experience, I think. I think like Chris has got a lot of experience with AEB. I've had really good luck with Metal Cloak on mine. I think ultimately it's the getting a quality part. I mean, and I think you'd also find that some of them do certain pieces of the lift better. A good example is Bill can show in that 392 he has, or a friend of ours, Willie's, we kind of got the best springs. Like, they picked up rock crawler springs with clean arms and Metal Cloak track bars or whatever it is. Like, you can kind of pick and choose the parts from there that you think that you've had the best experience with or whatever. But for me, I think that I like coil springs because that's what I have experience with. So when you say expansion without picking a vendor, just really good quality set of springs and really, really good shocks. I think making sure you've got it matched, making sure you've got the right components or quality is probably more important than any individual vendor.
Yeah, and vendors will change things over time. They'll go with different suppliers and stuff, and that can really change a lot of things about the suspension system. Of course, this is just roundtable. This is just our opinion. So give somebody a good starting point, I think, when we use our experiences.
Yeah, and this is Larry from St. Louis. So that's kind of the reason why I put that out there, and I think John pretty much hit it right on the head, for me at least, because for my suspension, it's kind of a, I'm going to call it a hodgepodge, and Metal Cloak springs and Hairflex shocks and, some Metal Cloak joints. So just try to pick what works and always buy a good part.
It's probably like putting together, it's kind of like putting together a gun. You can buy a whole kit from somebody, or you can get the parts that people like and build it up. And of course you can do that same thing with your lift, your suspension lift. And right. Some people do that. I've kind of done that with the XJ over time, started with a rough country lift and then started changing out to different things. I'm sorry, Bob, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, this is Bob from Colorado. I got the rough country on mine, and for the price, as a beginner lift kit, I can't fault it for what it is. Mm-hmm. It's not meant to be a TerraFlex or a Metal Cloak lift kit. It's a Rough Country beginner kit. But get somebody started, it works.
I think you have to ask the question of what are you going to do with it, though, too, because any lift could be great. It just depends on what you're doing with it.
No, well, it'll get me to Ulta to buy my wife her lipstick.
Yeah, the 2003 TJ, my wife's 2003 TJ, that's what I went with, was Rough Country. And obviously the TJ had about 90,000 miles on it when we got it, so it wasn't a brand new suspension system on the factory. Suspension wasn't brand new. But keeping that in mind, the Rough Country's 4-inch lift that I put on there rode a lot better than what the original factory one did. And of course, at the time, that was a thing that Rough Country was actually advertising, that it was actually smoother and felt better. I had a much better ride on road than the factory suspension.
When did you put that lift on the TJ, Tony?
Oh, God. It's probably 7 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's been a long time. Rough
Country spent a lot of time in R&D improving their product in the past, 3 to 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. They really made a big push to try to improve their image with a better product.
Right. Yeah, so. It still surprises me anytime anybody has a Rough Country sticker across their windshield.
And made it less rough.
They're just not known for high quality suspension systems. And when I say high quality, they're not real expensive. And of course, a lot of people make the mistake that expensive is better. It may not be a mistake. In some cases, that is the case, that it's more expensive and it is better. But you know how I am about the you get what you pay for. It really depends. You have to do research. And sometimes, quite often, actually, I think that doing your research, you can find something that has a much better price performance than something that is such a high-end thing. I think people use price in lieu of research sometimes. Anybody else have a suspension that you like or you didn't like? I guess more importantly, you didn't like.
This is Josh from Utah. When I got my Jeep, I started the Rough Country, and that stuff is worn out. I've replaced it. I got Rock Crawler Triple Eight coils on it now, and Bilstein shocks. And my next upgrade would probably be the Blinks. I'm going with Core 4x4.
Yep, that's what I'm talking about. Getting the parts from the various vendors and coming up with your own unique suspension system. I'd say that probably the worst part of Rough Country, at least a few years back, they may be fine now, were the shocks. The shocks were not super high quality.
That's probably the only thing that I'm not 100% certain yet, but I've got some noises under the Jeep. And I think, I think last year in Moab, I pushed the shocks a little bit harder than I should have, and I've had some issues since.
Mm-hmm.
But Larry was riding with me that day. I might have done a little more than my little shocks were meant to do.
Showing off.
Well, when a 48 flat fender was out wheeling us, we were told we had to hustle up a little bit.
Yeah. What happens in Moab stays in Moab.
Not tonight, apparently.
What's this? I have no problem saying I broke my shit.
Watch this. Never turns out good.
Sometimes you end up with some really nice replacement parts.
And a good story. Anybody else has anything for suspension, favorite suspension, pros and cons?
I like my Metal Cloak, but I don't know how much I can say considering I never had any of the lifts. So.
Well, no, you can. That's like what I was saying earlier. You don't have to be a investigator of suspension lifts. You have something, and you know whether you like it or not. So I think everybody, all the listeners, understand that this is opinion. None of it's scientific.
No, I mean, I like it. It's done everything I've asked it to so far.
This is Bill from Central Texas. I'll give a shout out to the Steer Smart. So I'll, you know, I have their tie rods and their track bars and their drag links. And I mean, those things are just beefy. And the thing I really like about like the drag link and the track bars is you can adjust them without having to take them off.
Oh, yes. Right?
So you got a track bar, you just loosen up the two clamps and you can just rotate that sleeve in there and quickly dial it in without having to drop it down, spin it, and then put it back up and kind of doing all the trial and error. It's super, super easy. And it's, the track bars are just beefy as hell. I think, John, you're looking at it at my track bar and we were doing the lift and you're like, Jesus Christ, it was, you know, like twice as thick as like the normal track bar. So
I was a little surprised to hear. I mean, there's several people that I really trust what they have to say about Jeep parts. And I was really surprised to hear how good the Steer Smart's parts are. I think it's mainly because of the name. It's just Steer Smart's. This doesn't sound like a catchy, beefy type thing. I don't know why. It's just the name has always kind of put me off. But hearing that it's such great stuff, I think when I go to buy some beefier parts for the Gladiator, that's who I'm going to get it from.
You know, the one thing I can say about the Metal Cloak lift that I do like about it is the fact that it does, and I don't know if this is the same with other lifts or not, but the fact that their lift is set up, like you get the 3.5, it's set up to be loaded down in half 3.5, not 3.5, you load it down and you end up 2. So, because a lot of the things I've done so far camping wise, I mean, my Jeep is always loaded down. So to be able to still have that lift and capability with, you know, almost that gross weight is nice.
One thing I'll say that's good and it's bad. So if you're not fully aware of that, I mean, because you're normally not driving your rig around with that much weight on it all the time, right, probably. And one of the things we found, I think, with the Metal Cloaks was, I think we got, was it a 2.5-inch lift on that Willys bill that we put in there? I think we got like almost 5 inches or something out of the back. I mean,
oh my God.
Crazy.
Like Inspector Gadget or something with the spring.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And so it kind of throws up everything else because you're not expecting it to get that much lift out of the spring. So now your control arms and just how everything else is, it really makes it, can make it tough. So it's good, but there is a downfall at that kind of level. And the other part of that was when I bought my new shocks that I put on there, because I had the Metal Cloak springs, the shop that I bought the shocks through, you know, they thought the same thing. Hey, Metal Cloaks run really, really long. So if you have a 3.5-inch and you buy the 3.5-inch shocks, you're going to be limiting yourself. So you need to go with the 4.5-inch shocks. Well, now my springs dance a little bit. So I had to that. But it's a little bit harder to dial it in because the springs are so stiff or whatever. So tall.
But you really can't say that they run tall. They run tall, but it depends on how the vehicle is. If it's just a stock basic Jeep with no skid plates, no winch, no armor of any kind on it, no metal bumpers, you got plastic bumpers, you're gonna have that 5 inches you're talking about. But it's nice that, you know, you can throw the skid plates, the winch, the metal bumpers, the roof rack, and you're still gonna end up with a nice lift versus just being at that stock Jeep having the 3.5 ending up being 2 or 1.5.
You are, and I'm not trying to say anything negative about Metal Cloak. I mean, that's what I run. I like it. It performs great when I'm on there. My point, though, is mine is also loaded down. I've got steel bumpers and armor and all kinds of stuff on mine, and they're still running tall, right? So it's just something to be cautious. It's good to call out because you do get that added advantage of that extra stuff even when you load it down. But not everybody's going to be loaded down all the time, and they are. It's something to be cautious of when you're buying, or be aware of when you're buying those. And Metal Cloak, if you buy them and then you call them up, they'll be like, "Yeah, that's the way it is." And if you put them on, they won't take them back. And now you're got some springs to sell.
Like on John's Jeep, we pulled the springs off because he didn't want 5 inches of lift, right? And we ended up putting the rock crawler springs in there, and you know that brought it down like 2 inches,
right?
And but there were 2.5-inch springs too as well, so it's just something to be cognizant that they tend to run a little high, is that the vendor will tell you.
Yeah, and if you want that, like Roger was saying, when you're loaded down, that's great. rock and roll will go on. But if you're buying them expecting 2.5-inch lift, because that's what it said when you click the buy on the website, you should be aware they run a little bit taller.
So, Jimmy, a quick question for you. You've done a lot of modifications to your Wrangler. Is it? It's a JK, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got 2015 JK.
Right, JKU. It is it's a four-door, right?
Yeah, it's a four-door.
So, did you notice a difference in the height in the rear when you moved the spare tire from, and I think you're on 40, so we're talking about a significant amount of weight. Did you notice a difference in your lift in the back when you moved from the tailgate to inside over the axle?
Yeah, actually I did. I lifted probably 1.5 inches, which is more than I want, but I really can't, I've got coilovers on it, so I really can't adjust it down more. I'm going to have to worry about bottoming out on the coilovers because they're set with the hydraulic bump stops. So I kind of like the look, and I have passengers jump in and out, especially when we go off-roading a lot. So I don't want to make it level at ride height, because then if I put more weight, then I'm going to be riding on my bump stops anyway.
But you did notice a difference moving the weight far rear of the axle and then moving it over the axle.
And I go with the lightest spring weight, the lightest spring rate, there we go, possible, because I wanted to be as flexy and keep it as low as possible. I didn't want them to, you know, ride as high. So people always go to me like, well, how many inches you got to fit the 40s? I'm like, I don't know, it's 3.5, as low as I could get it.
Yeah, it depends, I guess is the answer.
Yeah, because then people are like, well, I've got 4, I've got 5. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, the higher you go, of course, we all know center of gravity is a serious concern. And then you put the height from tires, and you got to worry about, you know, rolling your Jeep over or not being able to perform because your center of gravity is too high.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather just slide across the skid plates I put across the bottom and bottom out a little bit and let the suspension flex down than be able to clear. Then have a better breakover angle.
Right. Yeah, nobody's going to notice the skids on the skid plate. They'll notice a rolled Jeep.
Yeah, and before that, I mean, I didn't have anything special on it before I went with that Evo Manufacturing kit. I actually just had a Rubicon Express 2.5-inch, and that's what's on my daily right now. And honestly, it performed really well. It's not a multi-spring rate. I think I spent like $600 on it, so it was affordable. And it was really just a couple brackets and springs and shocks. And that's what made me know I wanted to go that as far as I have gone with everything.
Mm-hmm.
My Wagoneer, I'm not so happy with the lift I did, which it's a Rusty's off-road, but they're known for being a really stiff ride. So it's not a surprise. But it was better to go with that than spend as much for the 2 rear leaf springs, because it was, you know, 4 leaf springs and all the shocks and a couple brackets for the same cost of just 2 regular height replacement springs, because Wagoneers get the what they call wag sag. So they tend to lean towards the driver's side rear. So they get this rear, you know, 1 corner is down and the rest are up. Type lean on them, and that's because the fuel tank's on that side and usually have more weight from the driver over there, and it just kind of weighs that back end down.
Right. So curious, did you go with Rusty's because nobody else had a lift for the Wagoneer?
There really weren't many kits out there back then. This was 11 years ago when I first got it. So it has come in handy. That's a real stiff spring, because for a while I was doing hardwood flooring out of it. And I could take a full load of wood in the back, just like a pickup truck, and show up with 1500 pounds of wood, to a job site, or, you know, it was handy.
Wow. A working Wagoneer. That had been something. All right. Anybody else want to throw your 2 cents in on your suspension, or maybe a suspension somebody got that they really hated? All right. Well,
I have one more thing to add about the Evo. The one thing I was kind of surprised about is the biggest limitation is actually my coilover. And I really wish they came, you know, had a selection to get a longer coilover with it. Cause I would have selected that, because now I'm looking at, you know, replacing the coilovers just so I can get an extra 2 or 4 inches of length.
So they didn't have it at the time, and they do now have longer ones. Is that why, or
no?
Why didn't you get the longer ones then?
They don't have it now. I had to really dig. I thought they were the 14-inch, but they're actually the 12-inch. And I probably, you know, the way those long arms work, I mean, you could definitely go all the way to like a 16 mm-hmm. and have it really drop way out. But then you're going to have to change your towers so that might change the kit quite a bit.
Right.
Interesting. Are you looking beyond? What Evo uses King, right? Is that the coilover they go with for the most part?
Yeah.
So have you looked at like the Fox or Bilstein or any of the other brands out there to see if you can find something different?
Yeah, I've looked. I have to decide whether, you know, the problem is I'm just one of those people that doesn't like selling stuff. So I'm just going to be dishing out that money over again. I'm going to have 4 coilovers sitting in the corner in a garage in my shop. And I don't necessarily know if that's what my wife's going to allow me to do or myself. I'll go crazy looking at them.
Coilovers are crazy expensive. And once you get, especially in the 14 inch variety, I mean, you're several $1,000 per coilover you can get to really quick. Mm-hmm.
And then I got to worry about tuning them too, because I know these are tuned for a JKU. Yes. And then I'm going to dish out a couple grand extra just to get a tune. So we're talking about, you know, probably in the range of, you know, $8,000 to upgrade. And I'm not going to get even half that out of the coilovers I have because they're used.
I think I spent about $800 on mine for the King coilover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I figure. You're going to get, you know, pennies on the dollar out of it. So you really have to be to the point where I really feel like it's something, it's a need, then, you know, it'd be nice to have a little bit more performance, a little extra articulation, because I've got more I could go down on everything. It's just, you know, that's where it all came out.
So I'll warn people, I don't know if you guys have had this this issue as well, but I'll warn people, it was very common in the past that you would get a lift, you go, you know, I only need a lift that's this high. And then either but you wanted a taller lift to run taller tires, or you were having some issues with the kit as a whole, and you wanted to replace some of the components. And you know, while you're in there, you might as well go another 2 inches or 3 inches taller. That's something to consider if you don't have a lift and you're looking at buying one. I think the standard recommendation back 10 years ago was go another inch or two. Whenever you get the kit, I think you're probably still going to be replacing some of the parts, but you'll be happier and save a little money going with a larger kit up to a point. You can go too high.
And lift isn't the, from a suspension point of view, once you start getting into the higher lifts, you start running into other problems.
Yes.
Specifically around, and not just your extending brake lines and everything else, but, well, I'm going to put bigger tires. Okay, well, now my tires are touching the, you know, the frame rails, because I put too big a tire on it. So now I'm playing with backspacing.
Yeah, backspacing.
Going down the rabbit hole.
Yes.
You can get really far down. And that's one of the things that's really nice about some of the kits that are in that, especially in that 2.5 to 3.5 inch range, is they're fairly complete. And you can get a, you know, a very common size wheel width backspacing of, you know, what, 4.5 inches or less. Factory ones kind of rough. I think they're like 4 3/4. But you can get like 4.5 inches of backspacing or less. You're probably not going to have too many rubbing issues going with 35s, 37s, depending on JKJL, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So those standard off-the-shelf kits, that's one of the things they do provide, is they tend to be kind of complete. They've got a lot of those components.
They've like been engineered to last a little while longer, yeah.
Right, so the pressure's not on you to kind of go, you know, coilover shopping or trying to figure out, you know, which control arms work better with what spring rates and all that kind of stuff, because this spring is higher than set, then, you know, all that stuff is meant to work together. So that's one advantage of buying one of those off-the-shelf kits that are well known and good quality, like AEV, like Chris Lift mentioned, Metal Cloak, you know, any of those that are good quality kits.
Don't forget drive shaft. Once you start getting too high, you start thinking about drive shafts.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard on the JKUs, you really have to look at that front drive shaft because of the recipa joint. Any lift at all, I think, mm-hmm. it causes an issue with that front drive shaft.
I replaced mine as soon as I lifted. That was part of my lift causes.
Yeah.
Switching front drive.
I actually, I'm trying to remember, I think it was Ian Johnson that went on a rant not long ago on his YouTube channel about the Rezepa joints. He said they're super strong.
That's what I've heard.
The problem with the Rezepa joint is that the boot tears if you change the angles at all. So if you've got the Rezepa joint, they're great joints, and they're actually they're about, you know, they add that strength like you would with a continuous velocity or a CV mm-hmm. shaft for an axle shaft, but the boots tear easier, so they can't take those angles because of the boots. There's got to be a way for them to make one that can take those angles even better.
So what's that that commercial where they take a screen door and put it on the bottom of a boat and then rub the
Flex Seal?
Yeah, Flex Seal. They need to Flex Seal those rubber boots.
Well, that and the rear drive shaft is the big problem with the rubber on the rear drive shaft when you start getting up, because when your rear end starts flexing a lot more with that factory drive shaft, especially in the JKUs, if you don't relocate your EVAP. And so that's that rabbit hole that Larry was on. Once you start going up there and you start getting more articulation, you start finding a lot of contact points.
You know, this is the worst thing about the downfall of forums, that people don't go to forums and hang out at forums, because you used to be able to go to a forum, and maybe still can to a degree, go and look up this information so that you at least have an idea before you commit the rabbit hole that you're going to be digging in.
You can still look it up. You just get 2,500 different answers.
Yeah.
You know, when my dad's front drive shaft went out, I found they actually make a larger joint to go at the end to allow more flexibility and prevent the boot from ripping. I forgot what brand it was, but I know since then we have had zero issues with his 3-inch lift. 37s now, or 35s.
So, when you talk about the boot ripping, are you talking about on the end of the axle or the drive shaft?
Drive shaft.
So the problem with the drive shaft, especially on the front, is not just the articulation. There's also some exhaust clearance issues and a lot of other stuff you can run into on the JKU in particular. I think ultimately, when you're looking at all those items, that rabbit hole of things to change. You got brake line clearance. How do you need to extend your brake lines out or not? You know, your ball joints and kind of all that stuff that goes with lifting it. So I think, go back to the original question, that starting with that quality kit, like we mentioned, is probably a good idea if you're just getting started.
Yeah, you could have to replace the whole exhaust system because the up travel causes your axle to smash into the loop-de-loop, the JK. On the 3.6 does up underneath like I had to do.
Right. That loop-de-loop is the big problem. That's the reason why I swapped out my drive shaft. Because I know Metal Cloak sold as part of their kit, they actually had like an extender or some crap you're supposed to put in. Instead of doing that, I just swapped out the drive shaft and didn't worry about it. And then I ended up having to replace the rear because the up travel and everything else, I was getting at all kinds of clearance issues with the rear. So I had to get rid of my rear exhaust as well and go to a totally separate kit on mine. So it can get expensive, as you can see. What I think Tony's got a phrase. What is that? No modification goes
unpunished.
Exactly.
It can be work punishment. It can be money punishment, and often is both.
Yeah, but is buying more stuff for your Jeep really a punishment?
If it's a modification, yes.
Punishment to my wife.
If your wife sees the bill, then it's a problem.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's move on to our next question. Do you keep a maintenance log for your Jeep? And this is from John L.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Right there. Oh, right there. Always have it.
Yes. Is it an accurate log, or is it something you remember to fill out? Paper?
I do. Well, it's also on Google Docs, but I've got the first copy here. So this is quick reference in the garage, and then I've got a Google Docs thing I put on there, too. So I write down everything from oil changes, tire rotations, when I put my shocks on, anything I do to the Jeep major. I even put on there when I installed the AC lights on the front, rock lights underneath. I kind of put everything I've done to it, you know, on that, that type of item.
Do you put part numbers and how much and how long to?
No, it's really just simple notes like, you know, oil change, here's the mileage, here's the date, that's it for the entry kind of thing. But
what about when your daughter lubricated the floor mats?
I didn't make it into the book there. So
what kind of mileage did that lubrication get on those floor mats?
Well, you know, it almost caused Bill to go sailing quite a bit.
I fell out of the damage.
going in to eat barbecue and he can't get grip or whatever to get out of
it. No, I did a split.
So, John, is there any reference to buy more cigars or get beaver nuggets in that log?
No, those are on auto order. So, no, it's I think it's a good idea because one of the reasons why I've always kept it was I like trend lines, but kind of, and what I do at work as well, I like to look at metric data to see trend lines and stuff like that. So if I start kind of seeing a problem that I'm seeing a lot more of, you know, balance issues with the tires or fuel mileage suddenly drops off quite a bit or whatever, you know, tracking that kind of data and kind of corresponding to a maintenance item. Oh, look, I installed the shocks in the state. And since then, I've had this problem kind of grown. So you just, it's data points.
I took my vehicle to the dealership. that's the wife's.
Been to the dealership and,
well, I was going to say that's the wife's vehicle though.
Now that one, yeah. That I don't have enough paper in that logbook to put all the problems she's had with that thing. So, never mind GM. Anyway, another time.
But that's a good list to carry with you, especially if you make a list of parts, so that when you're out for U joints and belts and stuff like that, that's easily accessible. So that if you're out, you know exactly what joints you need for the axle or for your drive shaft or what belt you need.
And torque specs.
Yeah, I have all torque specs in mind where I just, like, every time we're over here working on the vehicle, you know, I'll whip out the Google Docs or whatever, but I also have a logbook and I'm just like, all right, 135 foot pounds, like boom, 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 just going through and hitting everything. So just
absolutely
makes it easy instead of having to look it up.
Do you have that in Boatapaps as well?
So does throwing all the receipts from your old from your parts into your glove box count as a logbook?
No, that's evidence. Well, I don't want to leave evidence.
If it's not being used as a trash can.
If they say advanced auto, no.
Well, it's actually a good habit beyond the just log though. You're talking about the receipts. So my daughter's got her first car. We're about to go to get her license and everything else. And so went up the other day to get it inspected for registration coming up. And so teaching her to keep a folder at least. So she has like service stuff like that to keep all that shit. So you've got your own copy of it. So trying to teach her, it's not necessarily a service log, but it's a maintenance record to kind of keep all of that as well. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, it is. It's handy. My service record or parts record anyway is on Amazon. Just go to Amazon and go, Damon, I can't find it. What did it look like again? What color was the box that it was in? You know, that
there's actually a couple good apps out there. I use Car Notes on Android and you can have your garage. Like I've got all three family vehicles on there and I can track by each vehicle. You can actually enter all your costs in for each of the repairs and get run reports. It's kind of neat.
Yeah.
Does that allow you to scan? Cause I was looking for something like that. Where you can like do a barcode scan as well. Like, so say you're at the parts store getting oil, you can kind of scan the exact one you get and kind of, you know, put some record of it in there. Is it that smart or is it just?
I haven't gotten that down into it. There's a lot of features. I just started using it. You can, I think you can put receipts in there as well, but yeah, you can add insurance and fines and inspection reports in there as well. So.
Out the amount and then have that under a lock and key.
Well, you can put whatever amount you want in there, right?
Enter the password to find out the amount on the receipt.
I'm getting to that point where I've got so much, you know, my office, I got so much files of every paper, it's just easier to have something on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're somewhere.
Yeah, we're going to see more and more of that, whether it's on your phone or through your phone to the cloud. I think we'll see a lot more because online is very handy.
Well, yeah, you're out somewhere. You're at the auto store. You know, I didn't have to remember to bring a logbook because I know I have it, or papers. I have it on my phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, Google Drive. We use Google Notes, Doc.
OneNote.
Yeah. Yeah, that as well. So really anything that you can, Google's nice because I don't know if OneNote has an editor that is universal, but I know Google has a, I mean, I don't edit notes or put notes in from my phone, but I think I can through Google.
And well, let's face it, how many times are you out somewhere and, you know, I'm terrible with my I know my license plates, but if they ask you a VIN number for something, I don't know my VINs are. I just pull it up on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who keeps up with a 57-digit #5 VIN code?
Yeah.
All right, anybody else keep a maintenance log for your Jeep?
No yep. Need here.
Yeah, I just keep it in my head.
Yeah, getting younger there, Jimmy.
And when in doubt, I replace the fluids early.
Our listeners can't see this, but Jimmy has a nice Jeep Talk Show shirt on. I can't see the whole thing, but I'm thinking it's Jeep Talk Show. Yep, there it is, red, white, and blue. And that's Jimmy.
Jimmy, I keep a logbook for each vehicle. I got a binder in the garage with all the information in it. It helps me keep track of stuff. But the other thing is, if I decide to sell something, I can just pull the binder out, pull everything I got. When I made updates, what I changed, what, like when I replaced shocks or when I added something to it, and I've got it all right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when they say those shocks look pretty worn, I'm going to have to replace those. Give me $100 off. Well, let's go to the log. Nope, those are nice shocks that are not very old, they're just dirty. You know, it's funny. I really should have a logbook for each one of the Jeeps that we have here with 4.0s in them, because it's really easy to forget which one that you worked on whenever they look very similar underneath.
So, well, yeah, but you have a logbook. It's called Archives of Episodes.
Real hard to go through.
What are you trying to say? You change one Jeep's oil twice within 3,000 miles or something?
Well,
and
more,
the other one you went six?
More like track bars and parts, ball joints. So it really just depends.
What are steering stabilizers, Tony?
Huh? No, I really haven't replaced any steering stabilizers.
I never
damage them. They only get damaged when I let somebody drive the Gladiator.
If you work on it constantly, you don't have to keep track of records.
Yeah, what looks new? Yeah,
you just look at your hand and say, oh, that cut was from replacing that piece and that bruise was. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll let you know when it's time to replace the part.
When it's healed?
Yeah, it'll tell you.
I have an ongoing list of repairs I need to do.
Yep, I can see that. All right, well, let's go to our next question, unless somebody has anything else. For your wheeling style, which do you prefer, high horsepower and wheel speed or super low gearing and crawling? Another one from John L.
Steve-O, I'm like it slow. I mean, I like going in, you know, I've off-wheeled in Alaska, Sedona, Arizona. I'd rather just take in where I'm at. It's a destination for me, so rushing through it doesn't do much.
I think it's the control thing for me. I think that whenever you're going slow, it's a nice controlled up and over or through situation, where as opposed to balls to the walls, it's like it's going to break or I'm going to make it, one of the two.
Well, to be fair, the balls to the walls guys, you learn a lot from them what not to do.
Yeah. And nothing wrong with low and slow.
That's right.
Kind of a trick question, though, because high horsepower means you have to have it first, Bill.
I prefer to go slow, but you know it is nice having the extra power there when you're trying to, you know, get up something that you couldn't get up, you know, low and slow. So, you know, I'm playing with it, but trying not to break something at the same time. So
yeah, that's the great thing about having the additional whatever. Lockers, for example, having the lockers, it's just a tool that you can use in case you need it. And I think it's the same thing with the horsepower.
Can't say I've seen anyone break something going slow.
I was just going to say, is high horsepower kind of like the suspension, just another rabbit hole?
It can be. I think though, you'd have to look at it when you're talking about the driving side, whatever. It may not be, do you want to use horsepower or crawling to go up the same obstacle, right? So obviously, there's going to be a best way to attack that obstacle. Look at it as, Do you want to be on the trail going really slow, crawling over stuff, or does do you like maybe booking it down a fire road where you're going a lot faster out in the desert, or cooking it through the dunes with high horsepower throwing rooster tails, right? There's all different kinds of wheeling you can do in there, and which one, you know, which one do you prefer? Do you prefer going around? I kind of like a mix of both, obviously, but I don't have the Hemi yet. That I do the rooster tails in the sand, or go hauling ass across the desert or whatever, which, but those sound like a blast to me. Like those sound like a lot of fun, you know, grabbing a gear and hauling ass, suspension working well, you know, going across bumpy roads, whatever. Sounds like a lot of fun. So that's why I said it's a style type thing.
Yeah, but they frown upon it at the mall. So you got to be careful.
No, I got kicked out of the parking lot.
Especially inside the mall.
Only if they catch you driving across the grass.
Yeah, lock it up, son. Lock it up.
Yep.
So I could see that the high horsepower would be very good if you were in a multi-environment, especially one that had mud, because you could use that horsepower to clean out the lugs of your maximum traction or mud terrains and get rid of that clogging up the work, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, now, my TJ would not do well in the mud at all. I could not get the spin I needed for it if I wanted to. Growing up in the Midwest, we'd take our trucks out on the weekends, and horsepower and spin were what you had to have if you were going to get anywhere. If you hit one of the hills out at the lake and tried to go up slow, you were going to end up back down at the bottom if you ever got up at all.
Right. Hopefully not on your top or side.
There's a lot only of, once or twice.
There's a lot of places back east, though, that are, you know, very... let's call it skinny pedal centric, right? So that you've got rocks to climb over, but let's take Hot Springs. We were just at Hot Springs back at Thanksgiving with Larry and Bill and I, and the very last trail that we were on was called Rubicon Ridge. And traditionally, it's not a super crazy trail unless it's driving rain while you're on it, which is what it was doing while we were there. So it was a sloppy, muddy mess. And, you know, there were places where, you know, had a little bit more oomph, like, it would have made it a little bit easier to get up out of that situation. So I would have preferred to crawl a given obstacle, but the mud and the slickness on the rocks and stuff tells me that high horsepower is kind of what you need there.
Sometimes you need that wheel speed to clear the treads too.
Exactly. I don't think there's a lot of that on the West Coast, I guess. A lot of that's probably more...
There is right now.
Sure. Well, I think of Johnson Valley, right? When you watch Matt's Off-Road or whatever on the YouTube channels, you'll see them out there, you know, crawling through things really slow, but then they've got the dunes that they're trying to go across the Sand Hollow as well. So, you know, that's, I would think that in the dunes, high horsepower would be your best friend.
Well, that's a good question I'd like to ask. In a couple of 3 weeks, maybe a couple of weeks, King of the Hammers is going to be going on. Is anybody going to King of the Hammers from the group here, or the listener out there? Are you going to King of the Hammers? Email us, go to jeeptalkshow.com/contact and let us know.
I would love to. It's on my bucket list to go.
Bob? Yes.
Bob's eating.
I know. I'm like the girl at the restaurant who comes up and says, is there anything I do for you? Yeah, you can wait for me to finish this bite of food.
Ice cream.
Are you going to King of the Hammers, Bob?
No, we're doing Easter Jeep Safari in Jeep Beach in Daytona. And then I've got two Overland Expos to do right after that. And King of the Hammers, I'll do it once, just to say I did it, I think. To me, King of the Hammers looks like Burning Man. It's a wild, crazy time. It's very dusty and dirty. I'd go to Burning Man once, just say I went. I'll go to King of Hammers once, just to check it out. But
so you learn what it means when you get the Jeep thing, it burns when you pee? Is that what you're saying?
I guess that could be either one, King of the Hammers or Burning Man. At least they don't use that long 8-inch Q-tip anymore.
Oh, geez.
If you know, you know.
All Well, the Zoom meeting continues on, and you can be here to listen to all of it. Sometimes it goes on for an hour or more after we finish up the episode. It's often a lot of fun, and it's funny too. I guess it's typical that people get a little more open and eager to share whenever they're not being recorded, especially on a show listened to by thousands of people. So that could be a lot of fun to show up. And we often get a celebrity or so to get to listen to and ask questions of. So it's a lot of fun. You ought to join us. And of course, you can just go to jeeptalkshow.com/contact and look and see how to join the Zoom meeting every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. We'll, I think next week we actually have a Q&A with a guest, just having a quick look here. Yeah, so we will have a guest that we'll be doing a Q&A with. It is Brandon from Gearhead Fabworks. Gearhead Fabworks. So we'll do a quick little interview with Brandon, and then we will open that up to our Zoom members, our Zoom people. I'm sorry, I said member. It's not really a member. It's just people that want to join in. There's no membership. There's no pay to be on the Zoom meeting. Anybody can join in. We can support up to 100 people in the meeting. So if you'd like to come in and talk to Brandon of Gearhead Fabworks, next week will be a great time for you to do that. Get here, be here at 8 and 8 p.m. Central Time, and that way you'll catch the beginning and get right there and start asking Brandon questions just as quick as you can. So until next week, enjoy your Jeep, and we'll see you then.
Broadcasting since 2010.